like we're... I shrugged. I don't even know what we are supposed to be. He shook his head and sighed. Stood up. How can we get there if you don't let me? Spoken like a statement, an ultimatum. I had no choice, really. Miguel didn't know what the past year had been like. He'd heard, sure, but he wasn't actually there. He knew only the legend, not the reality. Day after day after day. Scratching and scraping, the damage done to me and by me. Every good thing turned bad. Lying in bed at night and imagining myself just... You don't understand, I said. He looked at me for a moment, and then he came up to my face, nose to nose, eye to eye. Not as close as we were a moment ago, and yet somehow more intimate than that. So, he said, tell me. I stood before him and I shook. I shook from his stare. Be fucking real with me. How? How could I do it? When underneath whatever he thought he saw in me was something so beyond repair. I stepped back, clenched my jaw, locked myself up, got dressed as fast as I could. He tried to stop me, called me back, but my split decision was already made. Run for your life. Still running, I guess. There's this photo of me going around now. Short hair, big goofy smile on my face. I saw it everywhere at that assembly a few weeks back. My mother must have found it on my phone. I guess she had no way of knowing that I edited the photo. A selfie, taken by Miguel. In the original, he is by my side, his smile as wide as mine. I was certain of one thing, how I felt when I was around him and when I wasn't. The first was exhilarating, the other, unbearable. Being with him was like being hooked on a drug. When we stopped seeing each other, I went into withdrawal. It was a long, dark summer.
Chapter 22. In the hallway at school the next morning, Zoe gives me a kiss in front of everyone. I have rehearsal after school, so I can't drive you home, she says. But don't forget, I'm picking you up at 7 for dinner. She kisses me again quickly, this time on the cheek, and heads off. I watch her walk away, and all I can do is think about the next time I get to see her.
Where were you last night?
I turn and find Alana.
I texted you, like, 50 times, she says, shaking her head. Don't worry, I handed out the postcards without you.
Oh, shit, I forgot, I'm really sorry, I say. I must have put the wrong date in my phone.
What is your deal, Evan?
I look around. I'd prefer to have this conversation in private.
The fundraising deadline is a week from now, Alana says, and I feel like you are 1,000 miles away. You haven't made any new videos. You haven't posted on the blog in, like, forever.
Well, I've been busy.
Busy with what? Alana says.
Living? Trying to? I was doing, you know, different things, I say.
How much do we have left to raise?
Oh, not much. Just $17,000. $17,000. Okay, that's a lot of dollars.
Look, I'm sure we'll get there. We just need to, you know, keep people engaged.
Exactly, she says, relieved that I'm finally making sense.
That's why I'm putting the emails between you and Connor online.
Wait, what? What do you mean? Seawater rushes into my tank. How do you know about the emails?
Mrs. Murphy sent them to me, Alana says. Just a few, but she says there are a ton more, that you, like, keep bringing her new ones.
You can't do that. She throws her head back dramatically.
I can't?
It's just, those conversations, they're private.
Not anymore. They belong to everyone now. I mean, that's the whole point. And the more private they are, the better. That's what people want to see. We have a responsibility to our community to show them everything, to tell them the truth.
The truth? Which truth? I answer all their emails and tell them about my life. I even uploaded a selfie. Haven't I shown enough?
What more does our community want from me?
Her wristwatch beeps.
I have to run, but I'm going to be sending you a list of questions to answer. Some of the emails don't make sense.
What? What do you mean?
Well, for example, you said that the first time you went to the orchard was the day you broke your arm, but then in other emails you talk about going there together since, like, last November.
That's easy to clear up. You see, I've never actually been to the orchard. I am not who you think I am, Alana. Those are probably just typos, I say. I mean, they're just emails. I think you're reading into them, like, way too much.
Her old smile returns in full force. You can explain it all when I send you the questions. You know how much the community loves hearing from you.
She walks away. I check my surroundings, trying to gauge what kind of scene we just made. Turns out, no one was paying attention. Everyone, walking, typing, locker stuffing, is too consumed with their own lives to care about mine. They've got their own girlfriends and boyfriends and best friends and parents, two of them, and projects, without a capital P. Most of them have totally forgotten about Connor Murphy. They might have contributed a few dollars to our orchard campaign, but it's not because they ever cared about keeping Connor's memory alive. They were just doing what everyone else is doing. The same thing I'm trying to do. Get through the day. As I'm heading to homeroom, I text Jared.
Dude.
I was gonna text you. My parents are out of town this weekend. The last time they used the liquor cabinet was Rosh Hashanah 97. We can drink whatever we want.
I can't this weekend. I have $17,000 to raise. Remember the Connor Project? You're supposed to be working on it?
Remember you told me you didn't need my help?
I didn't tell you to do nothing. I know you think this is a joke, but it isn't. It's important.
For Connor.
Yes, for Connor.
It's interesting you say that.
I look up from my phone. It's Jared, in the flesh.
Because, Jared says, pocketing his phone, when you really stop and think about it, Connor being dead is pretty much the best thing that's ever happened to you, isn't it?
Even for Jared, that's a horrible thing to think, let alone speak aloud.
Why would you say that?
What's poppin', Evan? Says a passerby. Well, think about it, Jared says. People at school actually talk to you now. You're almost popular, which is, like, miracle of miracles. If Connor hadn't died, you think that guy just now would have known your name? He wouldn't have. No one would.
That's true. I can't deny it.
But that's not what this is about. It never has been. I don't care if people at school know who I am. I don't care about any of that. All I ever wanted was to help the Murphys.
Help the Murphys, Jared repeats, like it's a company slogan. You keep saying that.
Don't be an asshole.
You don't be an asshole, he says, and storms off.
The bell rings, signaling the official start of the school day. It might as well be ending a boxing match. I feel like I've already gone 12 rounds.
Chapter 23. Zoe parks her Volvo in the driveway and shuts off the engine. She seals our arrival with a smile, and I smile back. She seems extra bubbly tonight, and I can't quite figure out why. Car rides with Zoe usually involve more music than talking, but on the way here, she kept the stereo low so she could tell me all about band practice. Apparently, Jameson, the bassist, who's really nice, can't stand the drummer because the drummer is a total egomaniac, and without the two of them vibing with each other, the entire rhythm section is off. Drama in jazz band. Who knew? We step inside the house, and Zoe deems it worthy of announcement.
We're here!
She yells, leaving her shoes on the mat in the foyer. I kick my shoes next to hers while she walks on ahead of me.
Sorry we're late, I hear her say.
We're just in the kitchen having a glass of wine, getting to know each other, Cynthia says. I catch up to Zoe and stop dead in my tracks.
My mother is here. My mother is here, holding a glass of wine, sitting with the Murphys.
We invited your mom to come join us for dinner tonight, Larry says, clearly thinking this is something that will make me happy.
Oh, I say, making eye contact with my mom. She is just as shocked as I am.
I didn't realize Evan was joining us too, she says.
I'm sorry, Cynthia says, laughing away a silly mistake. I didn't think to tell you.
Zoe's smile balloons to the size of a parade float.
Hi, I'm Zoe, she shakes my mom's hand. It's so nice to finally meet you.
My mother returns the smile, hers a balloon with holes, and says nothing. She's never heard Zoe's name before,
at least not for me. I can see the confusion in her eyes. Larry stands. Are we ready for another bottle?
Open the Portland, Cynthia tells Larry, then explaining to my mom. It's completely 100% sustainable, the entire production process. There was a whole feature on them in the New York Times. Incredible.
I whisper in Zoe's ear, did you know about this? She nods proudly.
It was my idea.
Hey, you two, Larry says, muscling the cork from a bottle. His V-neck sweater outlines his imposing chest. Why don't you sit down and join us? Zoe and I drop ourselves on a love seat, where absolutely no love will take place. The women sit side by side on the long sofa, Cynthia's refined style making my mother look like the college student she actually is. Her flowery top has endured too many cycles in the wash. I thought you had work tonight, I say to my mom. Well, this seemed important, she says, so I'm playing hooky. This. What exactly is this? It feels a lot like when you wander into a courtyard in Call of Duty and there's 30 combatants waiting to rain bullets down on you. It's called an ambush.
Your mother and I were just talking about how sneaky you and Connor were, Cynthia says, tapping my knee.
I force a closed-mouth grin, teeth grinding in terror. Larry returns with the new bottle, which he's poured into a fancy glass container.
No one had any idea how close you two were, he says.
I search desperately for a distraction.
Something smells really good.
Cynthia gazes in the direction of the kitchen.
Chicken Milanese.
I feel my mom staring at me.
I didn't realize you were spending so much time here.
She can barely squeeze the words through her tight smile. Clearly they'd been talking before we arrived. But what exactly was said? What does she know?
You've been working a lot, I say.
Why did I think you were at Jared's?
I look away.
I don't know.
I've left my body, watching the scene unfold from a distance. Or maybe that's just what I wish.
You can rest assured we take very good care of him, Larry says, refilling my mother's glass. He always eats a good meal when he's with us.
How nice.
My mother takes a long sip.
Evan was showing me all those scholarship contests you found, Zoe says. That was really impressive. There are like a million.
Finally, a statement my mom can get behind.
Well, Evan is a great writer.
I don't find that hard to believe at all, Larry says.
If they're going to talk about me like I'm not here, then maybe I can just go ahead and leave, because I'm certain I can't stay.
His teacher last year for English said he wrote one of the best papers she'd ever read about Sulu,
my mom says.
How about that, Cynthia says, equaling my mother's pride.
It's Sula. I didn't mean to say it out loud.
Sula? What did I say?
Sulu. I look down at the floor. The floor is the only safe place to look.
I believe Sulu is a character on Star Trek, Larry says, if I'm remembering correctly.
He laughs innocently and Zoe joins him. She goes to grab my hand and without thinking I pull away. I don't want anyone to touch me right now. My mom stares into her wine.
My mistake.
I shouldn't have done that. Now her embarrassment is my shame. An unbearable silence grips the room. Zoe changes the subject.
Speaking of scholarships,
I guess now is as good a time as any, Larry says. Cynthia, do you want to?
Well,
Cynthia says, letting the word make a dramatic dent on our brains. She places her wine on the coffee table. Whatever is happening right now, I can't stop it.
Zoe happened to mention to us the other day that Evan was having some difficulty,
Cynthia says.
That is, in terms of the financial burdens of college. And Larry and I started thinking about it. We were very fortunate to have been able to set aside some money for our son.
The mention of Connor trips her up. Larry holds her hand. I hold myself.
I'm okay, she says, pausing for a breath. I called you this morning to invite you to dinner, Heidi, because, well, first of all, because we want to thank you for allowing your son to have come into our lives. He was a dear, dear friend to our Connor, and we have just come to love him to pieces.
Larry and Zoe laugh again. My mom manages a small smile, not wanting to be left out, but, of course, it's too late for that. And she's only now starting to grapple with that fact. And with your blessing, we, Larry and I, and of course Zoe, we would like to give Evan the money we put away for our son so that he can use it to fulfill his dreams, just like he helped Connor. Deep breath. Fulfill his. I feel my hand being squeezed. I smell chicken in the oven. I see a sculpture of an unknown animal behind Cynthia's head. I might puke.
What do you think? Larry asks.
I think that this is the kindest, most compassionate, most generous gesture I could ever imagine someone making. It's also the most obscenely undeserved. I can almost see my mother's competing emotions duking it out inside her. Ultimately, there's no clear winner. She responds with only this.
Wow. I don't know what to say.
I don't know either.
It would be such a gift to us if we could do this for Evan, Larry says.
Cynthia agrees.
It would be a tremendous gift, Heidi.
I see my mother's emotions pick a side. Her face has hardened.
Well, my mom says,
thank you so much, but we're gonna be fine. I may not have a lot of money, but I do have some.
Oh, no, Cynthia says. We didn't mean to.
No, no, I understand.
My mom relinquishes her wine glass as if suddenly realizing it's full of poison.
I'm just... we have money. So I'm sorry that you were under the impression that we didn't. And whatever money we don't have, Evan will either get a scholarship or take loans out or he'll go to a community college. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all, Larry says.
I think that's the best thing for us to do. I don't want Evan to get the idea that it's okay to rely on other people for favors.
It's not a favor, Larry says.
Well, but as his mother, I need to set that example for him, that you can't expect things from strangers.
We are not strangers, Cynthia says. Everyone turns to her, all her former joy replaced with hurt. I wonder if I'm the only one who can see the dagger sticking out of her heart.
Of course not. My mom says, rising from the sofa.
Thank you for the wine. It was delicious.
Wait, Cynthia says, you're not staying for dinner?
I think I better go to work after all.
Oh no, Cynthia says.
Yes, my mom says, staring one of her daggers at me. If I'd known Evan was so concerned about our finances, I never would have taken the night off in the first place.
She grabs her purse and her phone falls out, forcing her to get on her knees to retrieve it from under the coffee table. Everyone watches silently, not knowing what to do or say. It's excruciating, every long second that it takes for her to get back up on her feet, straighten out her faded shirt, and finally turn and walk out of the house. Then she's gone. And everyone turns to me. Later that night, I open the front door to our house. The lamp is on in the living room. I find my mom sitting on the couch, still in her clothes from dinner. She's not reading, not watching TV, not drinking, not preparing to go to work, just waiting. The Murphys felt terrible for offending her. Cynthia offered to call her and apologize. I told her it wasn't necessary. I tried to explain how stressed she's been lately, with work and classes and everything, just really tired and overwhelmed, and whatever other adjective I could think of to describe her that sounded vaguely plausible. I sat at their table, forced the chicken Milanese into my unhungry stomach, and did my best just to get through the rest of the dinner moment by aching moment. He basically guaranteed me a paralegal job after I graduate, my mom says, pulling at a loose thread in her shirt. He gave me his business card. I tried to remind myself on the ride home to remain calm, but already I'm annoyed. So, what's wrong with that? You make it sound like it's a bad thing. My mom finally looks at me.
Do you have any idea how mortifying it is to find out that your son has been spending all this time with another family and you didn't even know it? You told me you were at Jared's.
I shrug.
If you're not here, then why does it matter where I am?
They think you're their son. These people.
Remaining calm is no longer possible.
They're not these people, okay? They're my...
What?
What are they?
I don't even know.
Because they act like they've adopted you, like I don't even exist.
They take care of me, I say.
She's up off the couch now.
They're not your parents, Evan. That is not your family. They're nice to me.
Oh, they're lovely, lovely people.
Yup.
They don't know you.
And you do.
I thought I did.
The disappointment in her voice. It sounds like my own voice, the one inside my head, the one only I can hear, the one that reminds me every morning when I wake up and at night when I go to bed what I am. A liar.
But if I'm full of shit, then so is she.
What do you know about me, Mom?
You don't know anything about me. You never even see me.
I'm trying my best.
They like me. I know how hard that is to believe. They don't think that there's something wrong with me, that I need to be fixed like you do.
She comes closer.
When have I ever said that?
Is she serious? Where do I even begin?
I have to go to therapy. I have to take drugs.
I'm your mother,
she says unapologetically.
My job is to take care of you.
I know. I'm such a burden. I'm the worst thing that ever happened to you. I ruined your life.
Look at me, she says, grabbing my face hard. You are the only, the one good thing that has ever happened to me, Evan.
Her eyes weaken. I'm supposed to ease up now, let her off the hook. But I'm so tired of curbing my emotions just to make room for hers.
I'm sorry, I can't give you anything more than that,
she says, losing it. I pull away from her.
It's not my fault that other people can.
Chapter 24. Like they've seen a ghost. That's what these kids look like when I arrive at the bus stop. Is it possible that I actually appear to them as hollow and immaterial as I feel inside? Or maybe it's just the fact that I haven't stood out here with them for a few weeks and they're surprised that I'm back. So am I. But also, I'm really not. I lied to Zoe and told her that I didn't need a ride to school this morning because my mother was going to take me. After what happened last night, it was easy for her to believe it. I didn't sleep. I couldn't. Morning came. I thought about skipping school, staying under the covers. I forced myself up. My mom had left for work. I found no notes waiting for me on the bathroom mirror or kitchen counter or on the front door on my way out. I stare at the ceiling through English and make good progress on boring a hole through the desk in calculus. I just want to be alone, the way I've always been. I don't want to be bothered or noticed or questioned. But that's just wishful thinking. When I'm heading to lunch, out of nowhere, Alana seizes me. She's clearly been staked out here in front of the cafeteria waiting for my arrival.
Why did Connor kill himself?
She asks. Alana's all business all the time, but today she's got an extra intensity, and I just wish for once she could muster a simple hello before laying into me about...
Wait, what?
I say.
He was doing better,
she says, a stack of papers in her hands.
That's what he told you in every single email, and then a month later he kills himself? Why do so many things in these emails just not make sense?
Because sometimes things don't make sense, okay? Things are messy and complicated.
Like you dating Zoe?
She looks around and adds, do you know what people are saying about you? What are people saying? It never occurred to me that people could be talking about me. For so long, going unnoticed was my default. Suddenly, I view my situation the way an outsider might. Evan Hansen is dating his best friend's sister just a few weeks after his death. Fuck, that looks bad. I try to wipe the thought from my mind and address Alana.
Why are you so obsessed with this? I mean, you didn't even know Connor.
Because it's important.
Important because you were lab partners? Or because, I don't know, maybe because it gives you another extracurricular for your college applications?
Alana's expression changes into something I've never seen on her. Defeat.
Important,
she says, trembling.
Because I know what it's like to feel invisible, just like Connor. Invisible and alone and like nobody would even notice if I vanished into thin air. I bet you used to know what that felt like, too.
She waits for me to say something. When I don't, she shakes her head at me and walks away. I no longer feel hollow. My chest is pounding, sweat on my brow. Alana awoke a primal reflex in me. Fight or flight. For once, I'm ready for the former. I scan the cafeteria for Jared and spot him in the food line. We haven't spoken since our whatever that was the other day. It seems to take him forever to emerge on the other side of the line and settle up at the register.
We need more emails, I tell him. Emails showing that Connor was getting worse.
Jared rolls his eyes and laughs.
This isn't funny, I say.
Oh, I think it's hilarious, Jared says. I think everyone would probably think it's hilarious.
What is that supposed to mean?
It means you should remember who your friends are.
I practically had to beg Jared to be my friend, and now he tries to stand here and threaten me and pretend like his feelings are hurt? He's even more manipulative than I thought.
You told me the only reason you talk to me is because of your car insurance.
He shrugs.
It's very interesting, I say. What is?
Your Israeli girlfriend? I make the air quote so he doesn't miss my point.
And your buddies from camp? I've never heard you once mention any of their names. I can if you want, Jared says. What's your point?
I step closer.
Maybe the only reason you talk to me is because you don't have any other friends.
He smiles, but with no confidence.
I could tell everyone everything.
He's bluffing. If I go down, he goes down too. I lower my voice.
Go ahead, Jared. Do it.
He doesn't react, so I keep going.
Tell everyone how you helped write emails pretending to be a kid who killed himself.
Once the words are out, I want to go back in time and unsay them. I've imagined in the past what it would take to render Jared speechless. I'm sorry I stumbled on the answer.
You're a fucking asshole, Evan, he says finally.
There's more bite in the words than in the delivery. For once, I gave him a taste of his own medicine. I thought it might feel better to be the one dishing it, but it's almost as bad as receiving it. I watch him walk away in the shoes I've worn. At the same time, I remember to smile. I want to assure anyone who is watching us that whatever they think they just saw was nothing more than harmless joking between friends. One of the people who happens to be watching from across the room is Zoe. It seems that flight is now the only real option. Somehow, I place one foot in front of the other, and I turn away from her and walk right out the door. But I can't hide from Zoe for long. That night, after I've avoided her all day, she sends me a text. I'm outside your house. Hiding in my bedroom used to be a cinch. Not too long ago, there was maybe one person in the entire world who might look for me. And on many days, even that person, the one who'd given birth to me, would lose track and the number would fall to zero. But lately, I feel like a wanted man. I get out of bed and look out my window. I see Zoe, in the glow of the street lamp, sitting on the trunk of her blue Volvo. After some hesitation, I type a response. Be right there! The exclamation is only for show. I'm always excited to see Zoe, but right now I've got layers upon layers of dread telling me to stay in seclusion. I open my drawer and find my Ativan. Strangely, the sight of my medicine makes me feel sick. I'm not that person anymore, and I don't want to go back. I drop the bottle and shut the drawer. I cast aside my doubt, and moments later I'm walking out of my house and joining Zoe on the street. Hey, I say, unsure whether to invite her inside or get in her car or what. She makes no move to embrace me. She just sits there. I remain standing, acknowledging the distance between us. How can there not be distance after what happened last night? It's one thing to assume there'd be distance, and another thing to have it confirmed. Now that I'm witnessing it, I can't stand it. What's going on? She says. I just want to know. I check her face for some hint of intention, anything, but find it blank. I'm not sure what you mean. Nothing's going on.
Nothing? Really?
She says, a sudden edge to her voice. I feel the ground beneath me start to wobble. Is something wrong? She forces a laugh.
Yeah? You've been ignoring me all day. I don't get it. I tried to do this nice thing for you, and then, I don't know, your mom freaked out and...
Yeah, I say, breathing out. I know.
It's just kind of...
What?
Weird, don't you think?
Yes? No?
Maybe? I really don't know what to think anymore.
She sees my confusion.
We've been dating a while now, and I just thought everything was going... That we were...
She pauses, looks down. Your mom had no idea who I was. How's that possible? Did you not mention me even once?
It's complicated. So complicated.
My mom and I, we're not...
It's not like that.
Not like what, Evan?
I kept telling you that I wanted to meet her, and you'd always just change the subject.
What is that? First you have the secret friendship with my brother, and now I'm your secret girlfriend? I'm tired of it, of just being ignored all the time.
I want to go to her.
I'm sorry, I say.
Stop.
Really, I am. I didn't mean... Stop it, will you? Stop being sorry!
Her words echo through the neighborhood. I want to follow them into the air and just disappear. She drops her head and turns mute. If she wanted to leave, she could get in her car right now and go. But she's not doing that. She's still here. I joined her on the trunk, facing forward. A gust of wind rattles the leaves of a black oak. That kind of tree, at that height, is probably older than my house. And yet, as mighty and proud as it looks, it still shakes in the wind.
It's just been hard, she says, these past few weeks.
I know what she means. It has been hard. I want her to tell me everything she's been feeling, about our relationship, about what's been going on with us. I can do better, I swear. We can get past this.
I just...
She starts.
You can tell me.
I just miss him, Zoe says. It's not the same without him. He could be a jerk sometimes, but I still miss him.
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 What the fuck is wrong with me?
She looks me in the eye.
Don't you miss him?
I was his best friend.
Of course, I say. Of course I miss him.
She drops her head on my shoulder.
Don't go.
Fighting for air, I tell her.
I won't. No, I mean, ever.
I look ahead into the black night. Chapter 25. Last night walloped me. Sitting there watching Zoe come undone, not being able to be truthful with her. It was pure agony. And yet I'm willing to endure the agony to keep her. She means that much to me. She's kind and quirky and funny and bright and passionate and insecure and ambitious and volatile and talented. She has a voice and something to say, and she's also interested in what I have to say, even if I'm babbling on about birds and trees. She finds my idiosyncrasies endearing. She thinks the dorky way I dress is cute. She says my bedroom has a boyish charm. She doesn't mind holding my sweaty hands. She challenges me. She makes me think twice about saying sorry. She forces me to try other sushi rolls besides my standard California. She wants us to coordinate Halloween costumes. We've settled on Bonnie and Clyde. I already bought my fedora. She fills me with the kind of confidence that makes me want to start driving again. She wants to know every part of me, where I live, what I looked like as a baby, who my mom is. She even cares about my future. She tried to get her parents to pay for my education. Zoe and I could end up going to the same college. There's no reason we couldn't stay together for a long time. I used to think that the idea of a soulmate was the most ludicrous drivel I'd ever heard. But maybe not. Maybe it's something beyond our understanding, and maybe Zoe is my one true match. She could be my wife. I would cast aside all my misgivings about marriage, disregard all those bleak divorce statistics, and the example of my own parents for her. There's nothing I wouldn't do for her. And not just her. The Murphys, too. They've given me so much. They've invited me into their home and into their lives with open arms. Their generosity and support and acceptance overwhelm me. Larry's guidance and trust. Cynthia's love. Her embrace. Zoe told me herself how much her mother likes having me around, how obsessed she is with what I've done, how I bring with me Connor. The lies. No matter what I tell myself, I can never escape the lies.
If only I could find a way to explain it all. Maybe the Murphys would understand. Maybe everyone would understand. But I've already played it out in my head. Over and over. The act of totally coming clean. Leaving nothing unsaid. And each time I do, I reach the same terrifying conclusion. It'll all be gone. I'll be back where I started. No Murphys. No Zoe. No friends. Nobody. Nothing. Alone. And they'll be left alone again, too. Left with the same nothingness. No comfort, no hope. They'll be robbed of all the solace they've gained these last few weeks. It'll leave them devastated once again, the way they were when I first met them, before we built this community of alienated souls, before everything changed for the better, for all of us. It's time to refocus. Sitting up in bed, I send Alana a message asking her to video chat. Lucky for me, she's always on call. It's unclear whether she requires sleep. Good morning, I say when her face appears on my screen. Yes, she says, not even bothering to look up from her desk. Alana, I've been a bad co-president, and I'm sorry. You were absolutely right, but I'm back now. I'm rededicating myself to doing everything I can do to make this thing a success. Because the alternative is too terrifying. Too late, Alana says. I've already moved on. This was not the reaction I was prepared for. It takes a moment to recover. You've moved on? What does that mean? She slaps down her pen. You've made it abundantly clear to me that you're not interested in being a part of the Connor Project. But I am. I swear, I can make more videos. I can write stuff for the blog. I can do all that myself. It's not the same if you do it, Alana. People want to hear what I have to say. I was his best friend. You know what, Evan? I'm starting to wonder if that's even true. You keep saying you are best friends. You're like a broken freaking record about it. But nobody ever saw you together. Nobody knew you were friends. I feel faint. That's because it was a secret. He didn't want us to talk at school. I know the story, Evan, she says, returning to the work on her desk. We all know the story. We've heard it a bazillion times. But you've seen the emails? Alana almost laughs. Do you know how easy it is to create a fake email account and backdate emails? Because I do. My chest squeezes, making it hard to breathe. I try to pull in air, but I can't get enough of it. Whatever Alana is seeing on my face triggers a morsel of pity. Look, Evan, the Connor Project appreciates your contributions, but unfortunately, it's time to part ways. I'm the president of an organization that currently needs to raise, $14,000, and I'm afraid I have no more time to waste. Goodbye. Alana, wait! I can prove we were friends! Her finger freezes over the keyboard, her curiosity overruling. How? I minimize the chat window and locate the file on my computer. Here, I say, sending it through. I watch her eyes as she opens it and recognizes what it is. If we weren't friends, I say, then why did he write his suicide note to me? Oh my God. Do you believe me now? She reads it aloud. Dear Evan Hansen, it turns out this wasn't an amazing day after all. This isn't going to be an amazing week or an amazing year. Those words never go down easy. Right now, I can't even swallow them. They're choking me. You can't show that letter to anyone, okay? Nobody else needs to see it. This is exactly what people need to see, Alana says, a wildness in her eyes. We need something to create new interest. I'm up out of bed, walking around with my laptop, my whole body shaking. Can you please delete it? She's busy typing, barely listening. Don't you care about building the orchard? This is the best way to make Connor's dream come true. No, Alana, it isn't. Please. A message appears and my breath catches. At the top of my screen is a notification informing me that Alana Beck just posted to the Connor Project community. My finger quivering, I click the link, and instantly, I enter into a brand new reality. A giant asteroid has struck Earth. You put it online? I pray with all my being that what I'm seeing right now on screen is just a private message and is not actually visible to the public, but to my extreme horror, it's visible to all. Irreversibly so. Alana wrote a preface to the letter. Connor's note is a message to all of us.
Share it with as many people as you can. Post it everywhere. If you've ever felt alone like Connor, then please consider making a donation to the Connor Murphy Memorial Orchard. No amount is too small.
Alana, you don't understand, I say, gasping for air. You need to take it down. Please, please take it down. She can't hear me.
Alana!
She vanishes into thin air. I sit down. The bed isn't solid beneath me. There's nothing strong enough to catch my fall. I refresh my screen. I can't help myself. The responses are flooding in, an angry tide. They don't stop.
Have people seen this? Connor Murphy's suicide note. This is the actual authentic forward. The whole world needs to see this. Share it with everyone you know. This is why the orchard is so important, guys. I just gave $50 for the orchard, and I think everyone else should give as much as they can.
Repost. He wrote his suicide note to Evan Hansen because he knew his family didn't give a shit.
His parents, by the way, are insanely rich.
Forward.
Share.
Like. 5, 20. Here's 100. Maybe they should have spent their money on helping their son instead of, please retweet. Evan Hansen was the only one who was paying any attention.
Favorite.
Share.
Forward.
And all my hope is pinned on Zoe.
Zoe's a stuck-up bitch. Trust me, I go to school with her.
Share.
Forward.
$10.
Just contributed another 50.
Gave 41, the age my daughter would be if she hadn't taken her life.
Almost there. Keep spreading.
Larry Murphy is a corporate lawyer who only cares about money.
Cynthia Murphy is one of these disgusting women.
$160 more and the orchard will be fully funded.
Fuck the Murphys. Make them feel what Connor felt.
I love you guys.
Oh my god, we are $200 over our goal.
Their house is at the end of the cul-de-sac with the red door. Zoe's bedroom window is on the right. The gate to the back is completely unlocked.
Zoe's cell phone number, if my sources are correct.
I gave 20. I'm not saying to do anything illegal.
All hours, day and night.
1,000. Ring the doorbell.
Keep calling until they answer.
How long have I been sitting here holding my breath? I shut my laptop and search for my mom. She's not home. Big surprise. I sink to the ground. The weight of everything, the whole world, closes in on me. There's nowhere to go. Nowhere to hide. The ground below rumbles. Perfect timing for an earthquake. I deserve to be swallowed by the earth. I sit up and identify the true source of the rumble. It's Zoe calling. Hand trembling, I answer.
Can you come over?
She says.
I'm really scared.
I don't know how I'm going to get up, brush myself off, and go over to the Murphys. I don't think I have it in me. But Zoe needs me.
Of course, I say. Of course I will. I'll be right there.
I don't understand, Cynthia says, scrolling through the endless comments on her tablet. Where did they get Connor's note?
Larry, pacing the kitchen slowly, shakes his head, back and forth, back and forth.
I don't know. I'm seated across from Zoe and her mother at the table, my foot jackhammering the tiles. It's dark out, although I'm sure it was still afternoon when I got here. Until now, I've sat silently and watched the Murphys struggle to make sense of the narrative unfolding online and the onslaught of negativity now directed at them. I've offered moral support, not through words, but simply by being here, by holding Zoe's hand, by nodding when spoken to. But it's time now for me to say something, even though I don't trust my voice to function.
I tried to call Alana. She's not answering.
Some of these are adults, Cynthia says, ignoring me and showing the tablet to her husband.
Do you see their pictures? These are adults.
Zoe is also reading comments on her laptop. Her eyes are all out of tears. It seemed obvious when I got here that she had been crying, but her cheeks are dry now, as if she's turned numb to the avalanche of anger befalling her. Alana's post has spread everywhere, and seemingly to everyone. I keep searching for an exit. I can't find one. A phone rings and no one moves.
Let it ring, Larry says.
Zoe ignores her father and answers it.
Hello?
We all stand by.
Zoe?
Larry says.
Who is it?
Have fun with your miserable life, Zoe says and ends the call. Larry demands the phone.
Let me see the number.
It's blocked, Dad. Leave it alone.
Cynthia's cheek is twitching.
What did they say to you?
It doesn't matter, Zoe says.
Did they threaten you?
Larry says.
It doesn't matter, Zoe repeats.
Last night, I observed in her a deep and straightforward sadness. This is something far murkier.
a mixture of fear and fatigue and despair and, yes, sadness that seems to leave her feeling absolutely nothing.
That's it, Cynthia says, shutting her tablet. I'm calling the police.
She stands up and starts digging through her purse. Let's take a second here, Larry says. I'm sure this will blow over.
That's always your solution, isn't it? Do nothing.
Is that what I said, Cynthia? Zoe begs them to stop, but they can't hear her, or else they simply can't help themselves.
Wait and see, Cynthia says, locating her phone. Let's just wait and see, right, Larry?
What do you expect the police to do? It's the internet. Should they arrest the internet?
I had to beg you.
Every step of the way. Now hold on, Larry says, raising his hands in protest.
I had to plead with you, Cynthia says. For therapy, for rehab.
You went lurching from one miracle cure to the next.
Cynthia laughs with scorn. Miracle cure, really? Is that what you call it?
Because all he needed was another $20,000 weekend yoga retreat.
What was your alternative, Larry, other than picking apart everything I did?
Putting him on a program and sticking to it, Larry says, walking away. Zoe speaks up.
No, Dad, you wanted to punish him. Listen to your daughter, Larry. You treated him like a criminal, Zoe says.
Larry stands at the bar and pours himself a drink.
Are you listening to her?
Cynthia says.
You think you were any better, Mom? Zoe says. You let Connor do whatever he wanted.
Thank you, Larry says from across the room. This house is burning. I did this. I set it on fire. I never meant to. I only wanted to help them. This was my refuge. Improbable, but true. A place where I could come and feel safe and accepted and wanted. Now it's crumbling before my eyes, engulfed in anguish and anxiety and unrest. It has become me. Cynthia is in her husband's face.
When he threatened to kill himself the first time, do you remember what you said?
Oh, for Christ's sake, Larry says.
He just wants attention.
I'm not going to stand here and defend myself, Larry says, retreating to the window. Cynthia won't give up.
He was getting better. Ask Evan. Tell him, Evan.
Me? My foot stops pounding. I try to speak, to say something. Try, try, try. My broken record.
Evan did everything in his power to help him, Cynthia says. That's how much he cared.
She paints me like a hero, but underneath this mask is a monster.
Evan was in denial of what was happening right in front of him, Larry says. Don't put him in the middle of this, Zoe says.
You don't think I cared, Larry says, facing the window. It might be hard for you to believe, but I loved him just as much as you did. It moves me, but not Cynthia.
What about the note, Larry?
She says, retrieving it from the drawer. She places the letter on the table.
It's right here. I wish that everything was different. He wanted to be different. He wanted to be better.
Larry turns back. I did the best I could. I tried to help him the only way I knew how, and if that's not good enough... I stare ahead, listening, not listening. In my daze, I barely register the object at the center of the table. The table I've been sitting at now for over an hour. The table I've somehow, against all odds and sense, been invited to eat at night after night for weeks. I don't see the object. And then I do. It's the source of everything. The thing that made me the liar that I am. An apple. The apples rest in the same copper bowl where I first spotted them. They're different from the ones I initially pondered those many weeks ago, and their meaning has changed. They were once the lucky origin of a lie. Now they're the harshest reminder of the truth. Next to the bowl of apples is my letter. My eyes land on the last paragraph. I wish that everything was different. I turn away. I can't bear to look at it. At myself. At what I've done. What have I done?
He was trying to be better, Cynthia says. He was trying.
A buzzing starting at my core. And he was failing, Larry says. Buzzing through my bones and my blood and my skin, Cynthia pounds the table.
We failed him!
No. The sound of my voice startles us all. Everyone falls silent. Eyes flickering, making it hard to see. There's only one failure here. One colossal failure. Not them. Never them. They don't deserve this.
You didn't fail him.
It comes as a whisper.
I'd shout it if I had the strength. I only ever wanted to bring them peace, the same peace I found in them. The feeling that I belonged somewhere, that I meant something, they gave that to me. To me. Cynthia lifts the letter, that damn letter.
Look at what he wrote!
No. Not anymore. This feeling in my chest, this giant mass of hurt, building and building and building. I can't hold it in any longer, this guilt and pain and angst, climbing down my throat, strangling my gut, seizing my entire being totally and completely. The buzzing is now all out shaking my whole body in a kinetic frenzy. I can't go on with this inside me. Try, fail, try. I shut my eyes and I just... He didn't write it, I say. I hold my breath, try to freeze time, thinking if I can just keep the air inside my lungs forever, maybe I'll never have to face what comes next. But I breathe, because I'm weak, and I must. And I open my eyes, and everyone is looking at me, and I know it's only begun. The end of everything. But there's no way out now. I speak it out loud. I wrote it. A hand on my cowering back. Cynthia's. I shrink from her, ashamed, and yet also wishing she'd never let go. How can a mother's touch do that? Help and hurt all at once? You didn't write Connor's suicide note, Evan. The unthinkable. Who could believe it? Who could do it? This poor woman, her trust in me. The thought of it stings my eyes. One drop, and then another. The mass inside leaking out. I breathe. I try to breathe. It was an assignment from my therapist. I gasp for air. Write a letter to yourself. A pep talk. Dear Evan Hansen, today is going to be an amazing day, and here's why. Larry leans over the table, eyes searching. I don't understand. I try to control my shuddering, try to find the fortitude to answer him, this man who once placed his gentle hand on my shoulder. I was supposed to bring it to my appointment. Connor took it from me. He must have had it with him when you found him. Larry sits down, sinking in his chair. His mind can't process it.
What are you talking about? Zoe says.
Zoe. Her voice hurts the most. Strikes at my deepest center. I wipe my nose, my eyes, streaks on my shirt.
Connor and I... We weren't friends.
No, Cynthia says, unwilling to believe.
No.
I'm a sickness. A sobbing, shaking sickness, infecting these innocent, good people.
There were emails, Cynthia says. You showed us the emails.
A fairy tale friendship. A sad invention. You knew about the orchard, Larry says. He took you to the orchard.
That's where you broke your arm, Cynthia says.
A web of lies, weaved bit by bit, now tangled around me. Because the truth hurt too much. Not a funny story at all. No. What really happened is... I broke my arm at Ellison Park. By myself. Alone and feeling alone and not able to. Cynthia stands.
No. That day at the orchard. You and Connor at the orchard.
She looks at me, really looks at me. And that's all it takes.
Oh, God,
she says. I watch her crumble. Zoe.
But you told me that you two would talk about me, and that he would...
It breaks me anew, and I'm already shattered.
How could you do this?
The torture in her. I watch the final piece of the house I love reduced to ashes. Zoe jumps up from the table. Cynthia goes after her. There's only Larry now. I wait for him to crush me. The way I deserve. I want it to happen. I yearn for it. I wait. But after a moment,
He has only one thing to say.
Please leave. It's the please that destroys me.
8. I follow him out. He shuffles down the driveway and into the street, stands there, right in the middle, circling, pacing, talking to himself, rambling. I can't hear what he's saying, not until I get closer. What have you done? What the fuck have you done? I know it so well. The moment of reckoning after the worst mistake. The crossfire of regret, helplessness, hopelessness, hatred, on and on and on. A tsunami of self-torment. He pulls at his hair, grabbing whole chunks, striking blows to his own skull. No, 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 no! A rabid animal. What the fuck is wrong with me? I've asked all the same questions. Still asking them now. I turn back to the house. He let it all out. What he'd been carrying, everything. But he's still not free. Still has himself to deal with. Always the hardest one to face. He lowers onto the pavement, sits down in the street, right in the middle. Eerie, the way it looks, familiar, staged like a sacrifice. I turn around, checking for cars. It's dark here, no street lights. We're hidden in the shadows. I feel compelled to try. Get up, I say. He shakes his head, keeps shaking it. He can try to wish the pain away. Not going to make it stop. Trust me, I tried. A distant headlight. Evan sees it too, but doesn't move. I try again. Hey, get up. If the pain is in you, it's in you. It follows you everywhere. Can't outrun it. Can't erase it. Can't push it away. It only comes back. The way I've been thinking after all that's happened, maybe there's only one way to survive it. You have to let it in. Let it hurt you. And don't wait. It'll reach you eventually. Might as well be now. I bend down, get right in his face. I try to reach him, the way someone once tried to reach me. It's the last instinct we have, and the most difficult, nearly impossible. But still, it's our only choice. Own it, I say. I wasn't able to. You hear me, Evan? That's what you do. You get up and you own it.
Chapter 26. A vision. Staring into a mix of light and night, I see a vision. It's the same vision I've had before, a story I've told, one that became real to me and everyone and somehow still feels real now, even though it's not. I'm on the ground again, waiting for help, needing it, alone and helpless and empty, and the person who arrives in my mind once again, him. He's come to get me. I blink. Remembering where I am, in the middle of the street, I register the nearing headlight. It would be so easy to sit here and do nothing, to remain hidden in the dark and let the next moment take me, all the torment, over. I'm drained of every ounce of energy, but I force myself up. The last thing I want is the Murphys to wake up to a gory accident in front of their house. Another tragedy on their hands, after all the suffering and heartache and misery I've caused. I just want them to have some semblance of calm. If not tonight, then soon. Very, very soon. For me, there's only war inside. A raging battle with no end in sight. And fine. I know I deserve every harrowing minute of it. I step onto the curb as the car passes. I lean back against a roadside tree. A tree. Another fucking tree. They're everywhere. These soaring reminders. I am alone. The way I deserve to be. The way I'm meant to be. A fucking nothing. Unworthy to the core. How could I fool myself into thinking I could be deserving of anything close to happiness, to acceptance, and then fool others into thinking it too? How disgusting and pathetic to want something so badly, so desperately that I could be willing to do the most heinous things. I am